Welcome to the Scariest Things Podcast, your gateway to the trends and tropes of the horror genre. Tonight, a podcast extra and a question for our listening audience. What connects skin-erupting parasites, an adulterous romance novelist, and scalp children in shallow graves?
Answer, not David Cronenberg. We weren't able to get David Cronenberg.
No. We got the next best thing.
We got something better than David Cronenberg.
So the answer is, these are the nightmarish events that a young woman rushes to piece together as her comfortable life rapidly crumbles into bloody fragments. Are these merely random and unconnected dreams? Or is this horror part of a hidden tapestry known only as Immortal Macabre? We are proud to be joined with Danny Gosser, director of Immortal Macabre, and we are in the waning days of a Kickstarter campaign. So welcome, Danny. Thanks for joining The Scariest Things.
Yeah, I'm
and
really
turn
happy
off
to
the
be
podcast
here.
And go give to the Kickstarter.
Yes. So
no, don't turn off the podcast.
Yeah. After the podcast is done, then hit
turn
the site
it off
and contribute.
Yeah.
Because
get on it.
You know, support Portland horror films. That's what we will stump for this.
Yes, absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about your film.
Yeah, so if you do want to go to the site, it's immortalmacabre.com. That goes directly to the Kickstarter. And we've got the pitch video up there with my co-producer, Leslie Montgomery, and then the concept trailer. It's a full trailer. And a concept teaser as well on the page, as well as a bunch of information and interviews with the cast and crew and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're five days left. Mm-hmm. Friday at 9 p.m. is our deadline. We're at 29,500 right now.
Woo! So close.
So we're going to make like a PBS kind of a contribution line here. And so what? So tell
goal,
us, what can you get? There's
lots
a lot of Kickstarter
bonuses. Bags.
Yes.
Yeah, there's
lots
a ton of
tote
stuff.
Bags.
The goal is 50,000, so we've got a ways to go, but it's totally within reach. So if you do $10, you just get a shout out. I will thank you on Facebook. It'll be awesome. It's super macabre shit. I've got a bunch of gifts and stuff that I do. And then $20 is an HD download of the film.
Okay.
I think $35 is the score and the screenplay, as well as the HD download.
Okay.
$50, you get your name in the credits, plus so I think it's a special edition download.
Very nice.
With a bunch
very
of
nice
extra features.
Sure.
$60, you get a special edition Blu-ray. It's called the Super Macabre Limited Edition Exclusive Blu-ray that we'll send you. I'm going to make that amazing.
All right. Keep going. Eric's good for 2K.
Yeah.
We're going for the executive
producer role here.
Well, executive producer's $5,000.
Oh, Eric's
and
good for that.
The list on that is just insane, but we'll get to that. So the $100 one is you get a VHS called VHS is Immortal.
You're actually producing a VHS.
We're producing a VHS tape.
Oh, that's music to Mike's heart.
Wow.
Yeah. And we're doing that because when I was a kid, I used to go to First Stop Video in Oregon City in Hilltop, and they had 5 movies, 5 days, $5.
Nice.
Oh.
And we would just pick up like a huge stack
absolutely
of VHS tapes. So we're kind
I think Movie Madness is still 5 days, $5.
They've got
I
VHS
think
tapes for sure.
And they have Betamax too.
Really?
Just in case you want to take that, go down that route.
Oh, yeah. We used to have Betamax. My pops had Betamax, yeah. And then $200 is an associate producer credit. $250, this is a cool one, you get a bug prop.
Cool.
Okay.
Because in the film, we have bugs that hatch out of the character's skin, right?
Watch the trailer and be horrified and grossed out all at the same time.
So there's a bug prop that we're going to make. It's with my visual effects supervisor, Neil Taylor, who has worked at Leica for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And then also in the $250 is a behind-the-scenes disposable camera. So we'll take behind-the-scenes pictures and send that to you.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
And then also a crew T-shirt.
Cool.
And then from there it goes to $300, and that's an LP of the official score.
Wow.
A CD. Well,
it's all analog.
Yeah. And it's practical effects. Super practical effects.
Wow.
So yeah, it's
this is brilliant. I'm in.
It's the ultimate gift basket.
So and I am giving.
Let's see, $500. Okay, so this is the golden ticket to 31 Days of Horror.
Okay.
31 Days of Horror is a film, it's basically a festival that I do with my friends where we all get together and we watch 31 films, one horror film each day.
Right on.
So throughout the month of
October.
So is there a rhyme or reason to the to the 31 day selection? Do you have how do you go about coming up with that list?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when I first did it, I researched kind of what you guys are doing with the 100 best horror films. So there was an article, I think they update it every couple of years from Time Out in London, and it had a 100 best movies ever made that are horror. And so I just went through that and picked out the ones that I hadn't seen.
Now, okay, so some things that we have, I don't know if how much you've actually gotten a chance to dive into our podcast, but there, because we surveyed a lot of people, we don't necessarily agree with all of our jury's selections.
Tis true.
There are some...
A.K.A. Event Horizon.
A.K.A. Lost Boys. We will save some of your favorites for later on. In
apologies.
The
apologies to Liz Williams.
That's the $500 one. And then $750, we actually haven't had any take this.
Okay.
But I think it's super cool. You get a makeup session with our special effects makeup artist, Carrie Puderbaugh. And she'll make you up as a character. She's the lead makeup artist for Fear PDX, which is a haunt.
Yeah.
Then my co-producer is a professional photographer, and she'll take the pictures of you.
Cool.
Sweet. So any of you guys need some extra special Halloween get up, there you go.
Yeah, 750
and a basket of stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, I marvel at Kickstarter campaigns and how you have to fabricate it. I know that, you know, we're mulling over, it's not... Kickstarter, but it's a Patreon kind of things. Like, how do you incentivize contributions and get this thing going? Because this is really, pull up your bootstraps, do it yourself filmmaking, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
But you've got I was stunned at the kinds of crew that you've managed to get in your cast. Have you solidified your entire cast and crew now? Are you pretty much locked in at this point?
Pretty close, yeah. The main players are definitely there. Like I said, Neil Taylor is my visual effects supervisor. Mm-hmm. Worked at Leica. And then Adriano Ponti. I actually just reached out to him when I was cutting the concept trailer.
This is your composer.
My composer,
A full classical score for a film like... For a small independent film is... That's stunning.
He did it for the trailers.
That will be converted into an LP.
Yeah. Now he's incredibly talented. Really is. He's London based and he's Italian. And I think he's making inways in Europe with major films that he's been involved in.
So how did you find him?
I was searching. Okay. So when I was, the way that I edit, I need the music to cut the sequence together. And so I have temp music. A lot of editors do this. So,
I think Stanley Kubrick in 2001.
Yeah, he threw it out.
And it was some of the stuff stuck though. I think like Blue Danube or something. You're just doing classical music. It's like, yeah, maybe we'll stay with this.
Yeah.
But
So I had Krzysztof Penderecki, the Polish composer.
Oh, holy moly! Did you get? That was what you.
I used that as temp music.
Gotcha. Okay.
I used Polymorphia and Threnody for Hiroshima, and then a couple other ones that were just spliced in there, and they were really, really well spliced in. I mean, it was like the soul of the movie, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I reached out to Krzysztof Penderecki, and they wrote back, and the cost was super high.
Penderecki, for those of you not in the know, he is one of the great classical composers, living composers today. He's top of the food chain classical composer. So
for discordant
and perfect for horror.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's in The Shining. It's all over in The Shining.
And,
Scorsese has used him. He's never actually scored a film either. They take
pieces. Oh really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So the cost was too expensive. So I was looking at other things, and I was actually looking for a piece of music that would fit with one part of the film, which is when Carlotta, the evil grandmother, bends down into frame, and I wanted it to feel like a stomach drop.
Oh.
And so I searched horror music on YouTube.
Sure.
And I was just scrolling through, and I found this one that looked like a full orchestra on you. So I clicked on it, and the music just went... like that was the beginning. I was like, that's totally it. So I downloaded the video, I extracted the audio, I threw it, and I was like, oh, it's perfect. And I was like, but how am I going to use this?
Because right.
It's clearly professional stuff.
Yeah. So normally Eric's our Foley guy, but that was very good.
Yeah, I try. So then, and you can hear that in the full trailer at immortalmacabre.com. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
So I just wrote info at Adriano Aponte, mm-hmm. and he wrote me back. And wow. I sent him the trailers, and he was super into it.
Well, congratulations on
very
that.
Cool.
That is very cool. That is, because normally, you know, I associate these kinds of things with maybe someone with a guitar or cheesy Casio keyboard. Now it's the classic Hong Kong thing, right? Where you can only do what you can afford. But actually, this is you know, full live orchestration.
Well, I think he did it with. I mean, we didn't have a live orchestra. Okay. And when you watch the trailer, it feels like a live orchestra.
Right.
Okay.
But so he took my temp music and completely made it his own.
Oh, a remix.
No, the temp music's gone.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he used that as a mood guide.
Right, right.
You know, and just like really made the soul of the trailer come out.
Yeah. I know that one of the things that I've gotten comments back on our podcast is my brother-in-law is a musician, and so he the intro music
that, the little that stinger get, yeah
that, and that's you know he did a riff on Michael Jackson's Thriller mm-hmm. come for us and you know the sound quality of that piece helps override some of our
deficiencies
in our single mic here, soon to be to be upgraded.
Yes,
but
here's hoping.
Enough about our.
So is this your first feature length film, or have you done other stuff?
I have done other stuff.
Other feature length type stuff.
When I was 17, I wrote and directed and finished when I was 18 a feature length film.
Did you really?
That okay. I shot on. High eight, I think.
Okay.
And then since then, I went to Long Beach State, got my degree there. So just a series of short films.
A film degree, assumedly. Yeah. Okay.
And then LMU, I got my master's degree in film as well.
Okay.
Short films there, thesis film, all that.
Okay.
And then I wrote features. I probably have 5-6 scripts that I've written, some of them that were in various stages of development, some that I've sold for possible money in the future. And so this is,
Is this one that had been kicking around for a long time in your head?
Yeah, this is one that just was actually in a class.
Oh, okay.
In a horror class, genres, I wrote the short.
All right.
And I always thought the short was great.
Yeah.
And I just expanded on it and made these three stories as one film.
Okay. Well, you had me with skin erupting parasites.
You know, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I think... you have to go to the site to check out some of the effects that they're pulling off here. I'm sort of amazed.
Well, and not just the effects, the trailer, the GIFs that you mentioned,
right.
And then just the list of cast and crew is exceptional.
Yeah. We also have a lot of local Portland actors that mm-hmm. I should mention. Laura Welsh, very well-known. Elizabeth Zimmerman. John Garcia. He's actually a filmmaker in his own right. Mm-hmm. He's made, I think, 5 or 6 features, maybe more. Mm-hmm. And then Eben Hayes, Dana Shea. Just a bunch of really, really quality people and great, great talented actors.
Yeah, again, if you are part of our Portland listening audience, and we know there are a bunch of you, we forgive those of you who might be in Bangalore or London.
We've got Portland covered, Wales, and Malaysia.
Right. And our friends in Myanmar. We are still stunned that we have a tight connection with Myanmar. But, you know, I think, what is it about Portland, is there anything... Because you're shooting locally, right?
Mm-hmm.
And are you, where are you shooting? Sort of in because it's like you were out in the forest some.
Mm, yeah.
And is there? Can you lay some hints as to what the plot line may be here, or just no spoilers, but a.
Sort it's of gonna a be hard not to spoil it, but let's see what I can do.
Okay.
So it's three films, three stories mm-hmm. that are tied together as one story. That's why people compare it to Pulp Fiction, because you have, like, Creepshow is an anthology mm-hmm. with five films, and they're tied together by a comic, but there isn't an actual mm-hmm. overarching story, and there's no real reveal for the entire film. Mm-hmm. It's right. just three films with right. a beginning, middle, and end, or five films with a beginning, middle, and end.
Right.
And that's not the same thing here. It's one film with a big reveal at the end, and all three of them have a reveal. So,
right.
Have you seen Ghost Stories?
I just watched that.
Okay, because yeah, that was just, one. That sounds like...
similar.
Where you have three independent stories, but the thread that runs through it,
mm-hmm.
you know, that there's something consequential to each one of those films that leads to the big reveal.
And that so adds that, to the whole story.
Yeah. Is that sort of what you were after?
I was going to say VHS, not VHS 2.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I just watched Ghost Stories. It's totally, I mean, it's a completely different movie, but you're right. The thread and everything is right there. Mm-hmm. So,
you have some.
So the story you want, yeah. So the plots,
loose plots.
Yes.
Loose. We don't.
Okay, so the first story is called Bed Bugs, and it's about a salesman who gets cursed by this woman. His house gets cursed, and he gets cursed, and he develops this skin disease that becomes bumps. And at one point in the film, something moves under his skin. He's like, what the fuck? Right? So he goes to the doctor. The doctor's like, oh, it's all good. It's just psoriasis. He's like, no, man, something moved under my skin. And nothing's moving with the doctor, right? It's like the singing frog. So, right? So it gets progressively worse. And they're like pus filled, and they're on his arteries. Because they're eating.
Yeah, right.
Right. So by the end of the film, bugs hatch out.
Right on.
Yeah. And then the second story is called Carlotta, and this is about a little girl who's lost in a neighborhood, and she comes across this house with an older woman, and her name's Carlotta, and she seems like this really nice lady, and the little girl's crying because she can't find her parents. She takes her in. She pretends to call the police. We hear the dial tone as she hangs up the phone.
Okay.
Right? And then we cut to the little girl's mom and her aunt, and they're freaked out trying to find this little girl.
Right.
So we've got parallel storylines coming to a head, right? And as the story progresses with Carlotta and this little girl, it's very apparent that Carlotta's a big bad wolf. She is a wolf yeah. in sheep's clothing.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And we discover that she is a serial child murderer. And she scalps children's Oy, hair off.
Okay.
Whoa.
And, all right, then wears their hair as a wig. That's her thing. So that's the second story.
All right.
Pussy bugs. Serial child killers.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So the third story, which.
Wait, it gets better.
The third story, which acts as a wraparound, but it's also a story in its own, is about a romance novelist
mm-hmm.
who moves into this home with her husband. And she begins having these very vivid nightmares that are like waking dreams of these stories. So she dreams of bed bugs.
Mm-hmm.
And then she wakes up and she has her own story. And then she falls back to sleep and dreams of Carlotta.
Oh.
And so her story is that her and her husband are fighting over money. She starts growing close to her literary manager.
Mm-hmm.
She gets this deal. And then she has an affair with the literary manager. Okay. The husband finds out. Things get violent. She ends up knocking him out and then burying him alive in a shallow grave.
Oh.
By the end of the film, should I ruin it?
Does no,
it
matter? No, don't ruin it.
So, yeah.
All comes together, though, right. And we find out that all of these stories, it's not just the dreams that are connecting them.
Right on.
So, to recap, pussy bugs plus serial child killers plus revenge murder.
Shallow revenge, grave. Zombie-ish, dead-ski.
Yes.
Evil, dead-ish.
Equals. Okay. Equals. Go give money to the Kickstarter campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Immortalmacabre.com.
Yes. 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 Yeah. Go give money to the Kickstarter campaign. That sounds super cool.
Share it if you. We have a really high conversion rate on the pitch video. The pitch video gets, I think we're close to 25% conversion. And Kickstarter's average is like 8%. So okay. if you go to that page and you like the video, drop some cash if you have it and you want to see Portland Horror get made. If you don't, share the campaign on your Facebook and Twitter pages. It goes a really long way.
Yep. Yeah, and the video is exceptional. You know, the first time I watched it, I didn't realize it was a trilogy. I thought it was a single film, and I thought, oh my god, this film has so much stuff going on. This is crazy. Yeah. What does the pussy bugs have to do with this crazy looking grandma?
Yeah.
I couldn't figure it out, and now that I figured it out, I get it. But
anthological.
Yes.
So since what you did was you did a sort of a proof video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So are you going to have to reshoot any of that, or are you going to be, so?
We're going to reshoot all of that, yeah.
Okay.
So walk us through, like, for the uninitiated, mm-hmm. like, sort of step one, step two, step three, how long you anticipate all this taking from cradle to grave, kind of what your involvement is. I mean, I realize I'm describing, like, the entire production, but, like, generally speaking, I mean, what are you looking at for an independent film being developed? Cradle to grave.
Well, right now, from where we're at sitting,
yeah.
I wrote the first short in 2007.
Okay.
And then, like I said, I wrote a bunch of other scripts, and then I came back to it around 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine, actually, he wrote two other shorts, and then we parted ways.
Okay.
And then I revisited in 2014 and just went in and finished it and had a blast writing it and putting it all together.
Yeah.
And then I did a bunch of pre-production work because I just said, look, I've got this script and scripts just sit.
Yeah.
I said, if I'm actually going to make this movie, let's start doing things that are tangible.
Right.
Like, I'm going to budget this film out.
Right.
I'm going to line the script.
Right.
I'm going to completely break it down. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do an entire shot list. So yeah. I've got all that pre-production work already done. And
it's a lot of the foundational stuff.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the line producing paperwork.
Yep.
And then we decided to do the concept trailers. And then I had to figure out how to write a trailer.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Because I'm not actually, because usually trailers are made
after the film.
Third party that that oftentimes will do it, not actually the director himself.
Right. So normally you make the film and then a marketing division mm-hmm. of a production company will cut the trailer together based on and try and fit it in a box and mm-hmm. all that.
And your marketing division is?
Me.
Yes.
Right. So I
division, writer, editor.
Yeah. So I actually had to write pieces of each story
uh-huh.
and give enough story elements so that it was provocative enough that people wanted to see more. And it was a very difficult thing to do.
It paid off, though.
Yeah.
It looks great.
So, you know, I think one of the things that jumps off the page when you go to your website is your makeup and effects crew is a much higher standard than you would get for a lot of small independent productions. And I know that Neil's got his background with Leica. He was describing that... I think it was a fantastic connection between the Star Trek II
Wrath of Khan
with the ear mite thing that crawls into Chekhov's ear. Because when it was described as skin erupting parasites, I was thinking, well, there's that Star Trek moment. There's another Star Trek moment with Picard where the bug infects gets in the brains and they blow the admiral's head off, and there's a bug in there, and you know there's. So, you know, I was thinking along those lines, but I found it fascinating how he was describing using to pull off the effects properly to do oversized body parts.
Right.
And then use his experience as a puppeteer to bust that thing open. Is it your intention that you're going to do true stop motion with this?
I don't think so. I think maybe some because mm-hmm. he has that experience too, because Leica specializes almost exclusively in stop motion.
Right.
But I think for the more detailed close-ups, we're gonna try and do that with very well-crafted puppets.
So it's been like the chest burster or something like that.
Exactly like that. Yeah, kind of very similar, but not as singular.
Right.
It's going to be a whole bunch of them. And so we'll have those wide shots where we see a whole bunch of them.
Oh.
But then we'll cut in and, you know, we'll see the neck just open up. You know, and then we'll see his face. Get those cutaways. So It's going to be pieced together with a lot of different shots. And I've scheduled, I think, like a full week just on that like 1.5 page sequence. And I've budgeted out, I think, close to $20,000 just for that sequence. Okay. Because if we can sell the bug sequence, it will be completely unforgettable. The film will not be dismissible.
Right.
And
I think that the evidence, if you take a look at the makeup test.
Yeah.
And you see one of those worms crawls up the guy's up the sleeve, and it's like it's a simple move.
Yeah.
It's like it's a little bit of a card trick.
It is.
But you see the wound open up and the worms sort of sneak out, and it is it'll get you know that
it give you just enough.
The heebie-jeebies. Yeah.
It give you just enough.
And I can only imagine what it will how you try and pull off the pullback shot with all the things if they like. All emerge and start crawling all over.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's gonna be a blast.
Now, Eric went to Star Trek 2. When I saw the trailer, I immediately went to Shivers, Rabid, and the Brood, the David Cronenberg films.
Yeah, the Brood.
Well, you got the Fly.
Fly. Were you? I assume that's part of your lexicon.
Yeah.
Like, were you inspired by David Cronenberg? Is that something that's near and dear to your heart? Or
I love The Fly for sure.
Yeah,
It's one of the best body horror movies ever made.
That's
Eric
argues that repeatedly.
So I mean, Bedbugs is definitely body horror.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
no
yeah.
way around.
Oh
that.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And so The Fly, I definitely thought of that. Just. I think the influence of The Fly was the progressive deterioration.
Right. Yep.
And it's the same thing here. I think the idea for the actual bugs hatching out of the skin probably came from Creepshow, the creeping up on you
yep.
episode.
Yep. Yep.
The cockroaches.
The very end of that.
With Hal Holbrook.
That's
the crate. Yeah.
It's with
what's his name? Oh, man.
Great actor.
He's a neat freak.
Right.
A cockroach.
Yeah.
And he spots a cockroach. And then they eventually
dies,
just start issuing out of him.
And they're inside of him. And it's a little bit of an easier thing to do than what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, boy, he looks like a real carcass.
Yeah.
Tom Savini did the makeup and effects on that. And so I think I saw that when I was probably 9 or 10.
Yep.
You know, it's one of those films where a kid at that age will be freaked out.
Yep.
But it's not so bad that it's going to...
It is.
Yeah, I think it's not going to damage you.
Yeah. Landed somewhere in the 70s in our top
Creepshow, it did.
And
we opined that that's exactly where it should have been.
Yeah, and it is a great gateway horror film. We're hoping we've got another one coming here with this one.
Absolutely.
You know, I also noticed that you paid a great homage to my all-time favorite movie, The Thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
that's your favorite movie?
That's my number one of all movies of all genres.
Wow! So
The Thing.
That's true.
John Carpenter.
I say in the pitch video.
Yeah.
On the immortalmacabre.com page, where you watch the pitch video, and I say.
You put it side by side.
I will stand The Thing right next to The Godfather. Yeah,
right.
It's one of the greatest films ever made.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Yes.
And it, you know, I think it's
agreed.
One of those oddball situations where people didn't recognize it for what it was at the time.
Yeah.
Because it was so disturbing to look at, they sort of dismissed it as a freak show.
Yeah, Roger Ebert.
Yeah,
famously. And the New York Times, I think. I don't remember his name, but I've been
Pauline Kael.
He called it instant trash.
Yeah, shallot. Right. Was it shallot?
No.
I know.
No.
But they got dumped on a lot by critics.
And they really did. And the movie failed, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Commercially as well.
Well, I think it punished Carpenter. I don't think he never recovered getting back to doing big budget films again. And yet it is probably the high water mark of his career. Of a great career, which
Absolutely.
Includes Halloween, which includes
Big Trouble's Little China.
It's like,
you don't like Halloween?
I would put Halloween above The Thing.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
See, now that's
well. Halloween's so simple, right?
It is. It's
Halloween's
incredibly
like,
simple.
It's a very like short, uncomplicated script.
You know what's funny about it? Speaking of all the practical effects that you're amidst right now, I just recently watched Halloween at the Hollywood Theater with PJ Souls.
Oh, cool!
And
yeah, I meant to go to that.
the thing that was amazing to me was not having seen Halloween for the better part of 20 years was there's really no, there's no gore and there's almost no blood in that film.
Yeah.
And you, but you think in your mind, mm-hmm. It's just
this. It's almost a darker film than The Thing, which is way more graphic.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well,
the thing is, there's a lot of flashing of the knife.
Yeah. Right.
But actually,
it's
the
just
knife,
it's
the
all
knife,
menace. Yeah. It's just all menace and doom.
And The Thing is really a work of art.
Yeah.
You look at the practical effects that have been done in that. It's never been topped.
Nope.
No one's even tried to do it.
Nope.
Right.
It's just, and Rob Bottin, yeah. I think, was 23 and 24.
Yeah, yeah. He was just a kid.
It's amazing.
And yep. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
There's a, I don't know if you've seen it, one of our other authors on our website, Robert is a childhood friend of mine, and we watched The Thing together, and so we obsessed mutually about it. And but they talked about that he had a group of true thespians, who they were stage actors, who did the movie, and they all thought this was going to be their big breakout to be on a massive Hollywood hit, and that they were going to be set for life. That didn't turn out to be the case for most of them. Kurt Russell went on to a great career, but a lot of those guys became sort of bit players.
Right.
But it was sold, the gravity of it, that they were all a bunch of these method actors who really just got into it. And I think mm-hmm. that sort of the hunger of the sort of the stage actor background, like
very very theatrical, that movie. Yeah. It's one location. I mean, you could put it on as a play. You really
right.
could.
Exactly.
Barring the effects, if you could figure out how to mm-hmm. how to do the monster, I mean, it really right. could work as a play.
Yeah, and it's the
I would pay to see that
psychological
play.
Drama.
We saw
yeah, it's not just the gore and the effects yeah. and the scares. The characters in that film are extremely well drawn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, what your background in your for your writing? Mm-hmm. So who influences your scripts? What's who would you say you would most like to emulate, or do you or your own unique voice? What's your take on that?
I think I always look at the filmmaking process as three parts, and they're not dividable.
Mm-hmm.
I see it as writing, directing, and editing.
Mm-hmm.
The producing part of it is like putting everything together and doing super hard grunt work and organization and herding
right.
cats.
Right.
That's and really hard to do.
Making sure the train's on time.
But you haven't. You actually have. But you have a producer.
Who I do. Yeah.
Working with you to sort of to help you keep your sanity a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're both pulling the load there. Yeah. But so I, when you're writing, I'm thinking about directing and the editing as well. And when I'm directing, I'm thinking about the editing and what I wrote. And when I'm editing, I'm thinking about the other two steps. So they're intertwined for me. And I think a lot of filmmakers feel that way. A lot of them don't. So I think who I look to as filmmakers is like Martin Scorsese, Stanley Kubrick, Orson Welles, François Truffaut, Akira Kurosawa.
The big the top of the food chain.
You don't look to Roger Corman and
Rob Zombie.
Rob Zombie.
Well, I do look to George Romero.
Okay, there sure. you go. There you go.
But yeah, I horror kind of came to me. I'd seen a ton of horror films when I was a kid, but
right.
I studied huge. Classical film, yeah.
Right, right.
So do you see yourself doing more horror films, or are you going? Would you prefer to go to branch out after you wrap this? We're going to assume here that this is that there's going to be a successful launch.
Oh, it's getting made.
This thing's going to kill.
Well, it's getting made.
It'll only get made if the people who love horror and are listening to this want these type of horror films to get made, and you go to the site at immortalmacabre.com. And you either share or find a perk that you like and snap it up. Because
right.
that's the only way we're going to make it in 4 days. We're yep. going to get there. We just
yep.
totally need your guys' help.
Yep.
Yeah, so as far as branching out, yeah, I don't have another horror script like in the satchel.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a bunch of other scripts in yep. the satchel. So I imagine the next one will probably be a different genre.
Mm-hmm.
But... most of my scripts have some kind of dark element in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I doubt that I won't be returning to horror. I'm sure I will probably make another one.
Yeah. I hope so. Because that's, you know, because then we can get back in the fold. Yeah. You know, I think I would love to be able to stay in contact with the when you go into production, and because the opportunity to get some behind the scenes notes of how the production's going and all that kind of stuff would be some fun insight for our listeners.
Yeah, well, for I think at the $2,000 mark on the perks, you get a set visit.
There you go.
And you get to go to the premiere, the after party, the wrap party.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's a capital S sponsorship right there.
That's right. So given that obviously you're a student of film and a student of horror, what do you think about the state of horror in 2018? Good, bad, indifferent?
I think
there's a lot of crap out there.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting. Yeah. I mean, we've had a few tentpole horror films.
Oh, mm-hmm. My gosh, yeah.
It, Get Out, and Don't Breathe was pretty big.
Yep.
And then
Hereditary.
Yep.
So these are some big, like, studio films.
Right.
I think my only criticism with some of the stuff that's coming out is I kind of saw a trend with The Ring, which is a fantastic film.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've got those kind of muted colors and that type of camera movement that's in that film, those muted greens.
Yep.
And that's just been emulated since Saw. Saw right. kind of mm-hmm. took that style, and it's just been copied and copied.
Oh, when you see that in the Babadook, too, that whole film is, like, incredibly mute. It's not green, it's gray.
It totally works for the story.
It does. Oh, absolutely,
And
yeah.
so it's one of those, what I guess my criticism is when films in general, right. when they take a style and they apply it to a story that it doesn't necessarily need to be applied.
Right.
They're just trying to put it into a box so people will buy it.
Right. Right.
So I'd like to see more horror that the acting, the plot, the directing, everything that goes into it, all the artistic pieces are serving the characters and the plot.
I think we're getting there. I think those tent poles that you were just describing, I think Get Out is a fantastic example of something that embraces the characters and so the social tropes. Weaves a fantastic story with a great punchline.
Absolutely.
You know, it may not be capital H horror in the same way.
It's definitely more of a thriller with horror elements climaxing at the end.
Yeah.
Right. And then you get something like A Quiet Place, which is very thematic with a great acting performances. It's a different kind of an animal, but it's, you know, the story elevates above all else,
right?
I think and if that trend holds, I mean, we still get some slop like The Nun.
We get The Nun.
I haven't seen that yet.
You get Terrifier as well.
Oh,
yeah. Which is
sort of
void of story.
Okay, go to immortalmacabre.com and look at the Kickstarter. But if you haven't seen Terrifier yet, watch it just up to the 25-minute mark. That's as far as you really need to go.
Are they still in the restaurant at that point?
He's just taking it down the middle.
And I
got there.
Yes.
I got there. I was like, okay. I'm happy that I watched this film because that was hilarious.
That's about where I was.
Super the whole, messed up.
Yes. Incredibly messed up. But I mean, back to what you were sort of saying about the state of horror today. Is that it is more sort of plot driven, it is more character driven, whereas Terrifier was completely void of plot or interesting characters. Like you did not care about these protagonists whatsoever.
Yeah, it was definitely a vehicle for that
the clown, yes.
The clown, for the villain.
Yeah.
So yeah, like The Nun and the whole Conjuring. I mean, I really like The Conjuring actually.
Yeah, me too.
No, they're great.
But they are the offshoots
of they're studio productions.
Yeah, they kind of fit into a mold. They're trying to fit them into a mold, which is fine, you know. It's a business.
Yeah, I think one of the risks, you know, and as much as I elevate this current status of the new golden age of horror that I think we're in, the inherent risks are that the studios take the wrong lessons.
Right.
That they will do the rinse and repeat, and then they will try... That as opposed to recognizing that what's hit the table is a bunch of interesting original stories,
right?
And that's what's bringing up things like, even it's not a horror movie per se, but The Shape of Water,
mm-hmm.
you know, something that just let your imagination go wild. And you know, I'm hoping that's the lesson that they take, is take some more chances.
Yeah.
Don't go back to the well. The problem in the 90s and the aughts was we were seeing the same shit over and over and over again. And, right. and to the point where Wes Craven recognized it and he even sort of poked fun at himself for it.
Right.
Like you can see the influence of Scream on Halloween H2O and,
yes.
yep. you know, yep. like that yep. young kids who are, they know right, they're right. in a horror film, you know, like there were a ton of those movies, oh, like yeah. The Faculty and...
yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was an interesting time period.
We took a little bit of a break when, from... the momentum that we had in our with our podcast for a while, we were going through the eras. We started back in the golden age, the 1920s,
teens
to 30s, teens. And then we did the matinee. When we're gonna hit that dead spot right after, like about 1992, from 92 to about 2000,
yeah, right after Silence of the Lambs,
Silence of the Lambs, Last of the Great Ones, and you got a couple of them that are sprinkled in there, but it's like thematically, it's not a great place. And we hope that the lessons learned that people will take more chances on new directors, on new ideas. I had the opportunity to talk to Darren Lynn Bousman. I think I was telling you about this earlier this evening, but the director of Saw
2, 3, 4.
Yep. So another franchise guy, but he also did this fantastic film called St. Agatha. But and I said, so are you excited about this new trend? And he goes, well, I've been at this for a while, and it's so hard to make a movie, and this just means there's more competition for me.
Right.
You know, that he was getting concerned that all these hungry young artists are coming up and nipping at his heels, and, you know, that despite the fact that there's more opportunities that are being opened up, there's a lot more people recognizing that they want to get into the pool.
Right.
So, you know, but I think in that case you're the one nipping at his heels if you're coming out with the new stuff.
Danny,
I'm not looking to take any market verticals from anybody. I'm just looking to make a horror film that you can watch at a horror night and you can laugh and you can point at it and make fun of it, but you can also watch it as a real film and respect it for what it is. So I'm hoping it's all those things.
Yeah, where I'm hoping to land that this thing lands is sort of the way that Fangoria is going now, which they just did the new Puppet Master that came out.
Oh, right. Yeah,
You haven't seen it yet.
I haven't yet.
Vis-a-vis Cinestate.
The Full Moon stuff was, it was kind of rote. You know, it's like done cheaply, not a whole lot of effort, but mm-hmm. it was fun with puppets. The new one, they've taken the care to put real actors in it, and it's a real script. But they didn't shy away from being tasteless,
right?
That they still went for. We're going to gross you out. We're going to have moments in it that'll make you cringe. But there's actually a through line story that's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And so you know, I think that's when I'm thinking of you know, scalped children with with
you know, and pussy bugs. Uses, like,
the yeah,
pussy
we're not bugs. We're not shying away from the things that people repress.
Right. Yeah. I think I don't necessarily need everything to be
these are the
heady
things
psychological that, horror. This is I want some grossness from this.
There is some heady. There's a lot of heady psychological horror as well.
Okay.
In this film, all but right. Clearly the gross out factor's there. Even in the trailer, and it will be there in the film. Yeah, you guys check it out.
Yeah, and the more you contribute, the more gross out effects that he can afford.
Yeah, the better it will be with your help.
So, you know, I think one thing that would we sort of touched on this already, but your top 31 film or your 31 days of horror.
Yeah.
So what? If you we do a thing we call the fearsome foursome.
Yes, given how close we are to Halloween. Yeah. We're weeks away from Halloween.
Oh wow, okay.
So yes. So for our listening audience, four
what are the four horror films
to put in to stream for your Hollywood your Halloween binge night
or Hollywood binge night.
Yeah. Oh, depending on where you're at. This is tough.
And you already used the thing, so you can't reuse that.
You can't use the fly, you use that.
And you can't use the fly.
Okay. It's tough because you have to really DJ a night.
It's true. It's true. Grizzly's on the table. You can take Grizzly.
Piranha 2.
Piranha 2 is fine. Squirm. I can see some definite Squirm influences on this film.
Let's see. I would say... Let's do Peeping Tom to start.
Okay. You got our interest.
Peeping Tom to start.
Yep.
And then follow that up with... Oh, boy.
Peeping Tom is great, and we haven't given it enough love.
Oh, it's fantastic. You can even follow it up with Psycho. That would be a good one too.
Also brilliant.
Same year. And yeah. Psycho overshadowed it, and Peeping Tom ruined once his name's career from the red shoes.
Right.
And then you're probably getting late into the night, so I'd say Creepshow. I'm gonna use
that.
Yes. And then to end it off, I'd say this is such a ridiculous one, but The Legend of Ricky O, I believe it's called.
Whoa, what is that? Okay, now you're gonna have to explain The Legend of Ricky O to our listening audience. This is a deep dive pulled out from
So when you get late into the night, when you're at like 3 a.m. in the morning, everyone's kind of falling asleep.
You need some energy.
You need something that will like smash people in the face, like the bird at the end of Citizen Kane, right?
Yep.
You got to wake people up. So
that's right.
The Legend of Ricky O is about this martial artist who gets put in this jail. And we find out very quickly that he's not just a human. He can, like, punch through walls and rip people's faces off. It's pretty fantastic.
All right. It's super... Mike, I think that is something to put on our...
They have not shown The Legend of Ricky O at Kung Fu Night at the Hollywood Theater, but they need to get on it.
Yeah. Let me make sure it's The Legend of Ricky O. I'm pretty sure that's the name, but I saw that late at night at one of our horror nights, and I was about... Okay, it's Ricky O, The Story of Ricky.
Okay. And I was not to be confused with The Legend of Ricky Bobby.
So
Talladega Nights.
So is it a Hong Kong movie? Oh, it totally is. All right. So
it's from 91. So I was about to fall asleep, and I remember like the first 5 minutes, I stood up and was like, "Yes,
yes, go Ricky, go!"
And I was up. I was awake.
So what's the one that ended up on our landed on our 100 slot?
Yes, it did.
Spooky Encounters,
which I had never heard of. Eric had never heard of. Our jury of enough people.
Sharon Yablon's pick.
Yes. And
Hopping Zombies.
Hopping Zombies.
And Sammo Hung and some sort of I dare you to go into the temple and mess with the stuff that's in the temple and unleashing a bunch of hopping zombies.
Yes.
Right. And so it is
sucking pharaohs from Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Right. So it's a combination of The Legend of Ricky, or Ricky O, The Legend of Ricky.
Yes.
Story of Ricky, yes.
And Spooky Encounters. Yeah. We're going to have to do a double dose of Kung Fu horror.
That sounds awesome.
So Mike.
Thanks, Danny. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. I would encourage folks to go to immortalmacabre.com, check out the trailers. Check out the perks. Check out the Kickstarter campaign because there's tons of cool stuff. If you can't find yourself in one of those levels of sponsorship, then you're doing something wrong. Because I think what you guys are doing for Portland Horror is a great thing. I think there needs to be more stuff like this, and I think there's certainly a space in the pantheon of horror for Immortal Macabre.
Yeah, and we'll be posting more on this in addition to our podcast. Go check out scariestthings.com, 1T, and we will have links to all of these elements, including all of the teaser trailers. So, for all this and more.
And more. Danny, any parting thoughts?
Oh, I just had so much fun. Thank you, guys.
Of course.
Fantastic.
Absolutely.
And,
that was fun.
And yeah.
He's going to kill it.
Yeah, you guys won't be disappointed in this film. It's going to be unforgettable. We just got to get the support to make it. Yeah.
Get on it now. Turn the podcast off.
Thank you, guys.
Go.